first half, second half, like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together. Putting the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are recording this on the evening of Tuesday, May 21st, 2019. Rabbi Mark Goodman, the Game of Thrones has concluded, and the Colorado Rapids have won a game in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding from most Rapids fans was that they did not watch the second half so that they could watch the Game of Thrones. So I find that pretty funny. I don't watch the Game of the Thrones, so as we all know. So was it? Are you satisfied with the conclusion, Matt, or were you disappointed? Like a lot of people are.
Well, I guess first of all, I'll say to anybody who hasn't watched it, just to cover our you-know-whats, Mark, I'm going to say spoiler alert just in case. So skip ahead, you know, maybe 2-3 minutes on this one. I was content with it, all things considered. I feel like this season just felt so rushed on so many fronts because they limited as far as only having 6 episodes when normally most seasons, this is the 8th season of Game of Thrones, most of them had between, I think, 8 and 10, and most of the seasons had 10 episodes, and it just felt like there was too much waiting. There was one thing that happened, big thing that happened in the penultimate episode of this season and the series that a lot of people were upset about as far as plot development and character development and foreshadowing that I don't completely understand. I thought it was perfectly foreshadowed, and it perfectly set together that character and how their trajectory ultimately handled, but then they kind of wrapped things up haphazardly, and there's a one big meeting where ultimately the final lords kind of decide a few key things, and some of their logic didn't really make sense to me. There was one extremely trivial thing that happened at the end that I was very, very happy about that involved a good and loyal animal companion getting his deserved pets and due. So some people are upset with it. I think this sets up HBO and everything that they've got going on with George R. R. Martin to do some fun stuff with all the spinoffs they've got. They've got lots of prequel stuff. We kind of set up to where a couple other characters could have their own spinoffs. So I'm looking forward to seeing how HBO, propagates in their equivalent of the Silmarillion, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, let's get to some bittersweet stuff. Greg Berhalter and U.S. Soccer announced their provisional roster, 40-man roster for the 2019 CONCACAF Gold Cup. Jonathan Lewis is listed as a forward from the Colorado Rapids on this preliminary roster. Mark, Kellen Acosta is omitted from a roster that listed just 9 midfielders, and I would say at least 7 of them pretty much de facto locks at this point. Your thoughts on Jonathan Lewis getting a shout on this possibly as a winger, and then also I think Greg Berhalter clearly indicating that Kellen Acosta is behind a number of his other MLS competition in the midfield.
I'm trying to figure out what Jonathan Lewis is, or if he's as good as the 2 games that I've watched him closely. I mean, because the reason he ended up with the Rapids was because NYCFC weren't playing him. But the few games that I had seen of him before he was a Rapid were all little highlight reel moments where he took the ball and went on this, like, torching run down the flank. And I was like, well, that's cool, but can he do it for 90 minutes? You know, can he do it? The old school phrase is, can you do it on a rainy day, rainy night?
Can you do it on a rainy Wednesday at Stoke?
Yeah. And you know, the parallel to that is, like, anybody can be electric as a sub. Can a player be electric for 90 minutes and do it all the time, especially a winger, especially a young winger? I mean, I think that the number one candidate for that line of thinking is Dylan Serna, who has had these amazing super sub moments in Burgundy in his career. And then, you know, fans will get all excited about him and, you know, be like, oh, we can't wait to see him start. And then he'll just lay an egg like 2 weeks in a row as a starter. And then this year it kind of culminated in him finally getting some really electric starts as a left back before laying an egg, you know, after two or three games defensively. So, long story short with Jonathan Lewis, what I've seen from his two games in Burgundy so far have been electric and really fun to watch. He's really nonstop. And the thing I think that I like about him the most, and it's something that I honestly cannot remember a single player in Burgundy doing, except maybe on occasion Kevin Doyle, is that he'll take the ball, he'll dish it off, and then you'll immediately see him make a hard run and a hard run to a smart spot. It's something that he did a couple times against LA this last week, but he did it the week before that too. And that off the ball movement for a winger is really important, and also intelligent off the ball runs, like not just like put your head down and plow forward hard, but like run to a spot, run off the shoulder of the defender, run with a small feint in it, like you're running a post pattern or, you know, something with a little button hook in it, you know, like really, he's just like, he looks the part. And so I was really happy with him. On the other hand, you know, Kellen Acosta, he also had a really good game this week, but his body of work this season hasn't been impressive, and he hasn't been productive. And I think that that's important to note. I wonder, his last games under Connor Casey have been better, and I think that maybe what we learned from that is that maybe he's more comfortable when he's got a pretty clear position, and he's got the right people next to him, and he's a little bit deeper, but you know, his body of work isn't good enough, so that's why he's left off. Your thoughts, Matt?
I agree with you on Jonathan Lewis. I think maybe this is the forward core, as I see it, is there's Jozy Altidore and then a bunch of either role players or question marks. You know, if Jossie Zardes, who was on the provisional roster, ends up making the final 23-man roster, it's going to be probably as Josie's backup. But then there's a couple guys, you know, where does Christian Ramirez fit in, given how his run of form on LAFC is? So where I feel like the midfield core is pretty solid, Berhalter going low on numbers, but he trusts every single one of those guys. When it came to both the defensive, the defender, and the forward selections, I think it was, let me take a broad span in terms of players, where their form's at, and type, and then maybe whittle that down and then make some decisions. There is an opportunity at the end of the group stage in the Gold Cup for you to make, I believe it's either three or five, I can't remember, roster changes from that provisional roster. So if, say, Greg Berhalter doesn't want to burn out, you know, a Will Trapp, a Michael Bradley, you know, maybe somebody's got something really tied in with their club situation for the MLS players, Greg Berhalter can leave them home for the group stage game and then line change them in for the knockout stage or vice versa. So I'm wondering if Berhalter's saying, okay, this is my first cut list for the defenders and for the forwards. Everybody who's playing in MLS, show me something over the course of the next couple of weeks. That'll decide who I bring into camp. And then from there, I'll whittle that down into 23 players for the start of the group stage. So I think the next couple of games are going to be really critical for Jonathan Lewis. You mentioned, you know, the phrase, Mark, what is, you know, can he do it on a Wednesday, on a rainy night at Stoke? The term I would use is a match of the day player. This refers to normally if there's a Sunday primetime game, usually in the Premier League, folks, they will refer to that as the match of the day. And then that's like the Monday night football for the Premier League. And they break it down really, really intense and they do a whole highlight reel. And then that whole segment is normally in either 10, 15, or 20 minutes. So think of that like the 5-minute highlights that you typically get from MLSsoccer.com or on the app or ESPN Plus, they have a 20-minute condensed game. And so a match of the day player will look really, really good in those 5, 10, 20-minute highlights overall, but then won't be as impressive. They'll be diluted over the course of that. You know, that was famed the Landon Donovan main criticism against him, that he would have great moments, but he would fade in and out of games. That type of Landon Donovan would be a match of the day player. And I would say, Mark, the first two games that we've seen from Jonathan Lewis, while he's had some good moments, I would classify qualify him as a match of the day player? Can he have run off, you know, a good successive 90 minute performances over, you know, the next 2 to 3, maybe even 5 games? Then I think we're talking about a guy who feasibly could be in the hunt for Greg Berhalter. On the Kellen Acosta side, you know, I've lamented this the last couple of weeks, you know, in writing and on this podcast as well, just that Kellen just hasn't been up to snuff. And, you know, I'm sorry, Christian Pulisic playing for Dortmund, Weston McKennie, you know, leading into the knockout stage of Champions League with Schalke, and then you have, you know, Christian Roldan, who's a starter on a very good Seattle Sounders team. It doesn't really help when Kellen has been in and out of the lineup, hasn't had a well-defined role on a team that's been struggling, and he's been struggling independent of that. So I really think that Kellen, over the course of the season, has played himself out of being in contention for the Gold Cup. How much of that was Hudson and his issues, and, you know, if things had started over with Connor Casey or a different coach, or Kellen had a more defined role in midfield where everybody had a more defined role, possibly. But, you know, I think Jonathan Lewis is deserving of being on this provisional roster. I think Berhalter got it right in omitting Kellen Acosta, and we'll see what Lewis can do in the next couple weeks to see if we can have some Burgundy representation of the Gold Cup. Shall we get on to it, Mark?
Onward.
Listeners, we have good things to talk about. This past Sunday at Dignity Health Sports Park, the Colorado Rapids were victorious in their first win in league play in 2019. They defeated the LA Galaxy by a score of 1-0. This was a crazy game, Mark, that didn't have a lot of defense and also had almost no finishing. One finish, to be exact.
Yeah.
It was Andre Shinyashiki unassisted on a 3-on-2 break for the Colorado Rapids in the 82nd minute after Kai Kamara shoots right into David Bingham. Kamara had a bunch of opportunities, one or two of which I believe he hit off the post. There was some rumblings in the first half with the center back who was playing at left back for the Galaxy, Diego Polenta, who had, you know, an off-the-ball incident where potentially he had a forearm elbow to Kai Kamara's jaw area. Kai Kamara ends up, you know, going down, holding his jaw, has to come out of the game, but then comes back in. And then a couple of minutes later, Polenta steps on Sam Nicholson, who's falling down, and Nicholson kind of rolls and moves, and then Polenta's foot kind of gets dragged with it, and was that, you know, endangering the safety of the opponent? Studs down, was he stomping? VAR takes a look at it, ultimately decides it a yellow. I think Polenta very lucky to not be sent off on both of those occasions, Mark. And you had some really good counter-attacking opportunities for the Rapids. You had Sam Nicholson with a chip that Giancarlo Gonzalez had to clear off the line in the second half. In the first half, Jonathan Lewis, who we just mentioned, had a complete breakaway that he puts completely wide with Bingham off his line. Both kill keepers were active early and often. There were lots of chances. There was almost no finishing. Mark, what was your good thing from the Rapids' first win of 2019?
Yeah, I think despite the fact that the possession numbers favored LA a lot, I think that this was one of Colorado's better games, and they looked brighter and more creative than they had regularly. I think very often we saw how Sam Nicholson and Jonathan Lewis tie opponents in knots and create in ways that frustrates the opponent, and Kai Kamara knows how to work with them really well. And I really like the way that he checks to them, or that those wingers will use Kai Kamara to ping the ball over to him. There was a play in the first half that I was just absolutely just smitten with for the Rapids, where there was just a little 1-2 in the 19th minute between Kai Kamara and Jonathan Lewis that ended up with a really solid shot that went wide. But Kamara just read Lewis the whole way and then just pinged the ball right, played him right through. And he played right through the back line on a perfect delivery. And we didn't really see a lot of that, earlier in the season. And we really didn't see a lot of that last year. And so that kind of heads up play, we're talking about two players who weren't with the Rapids last year. So that's a really good thing. There were also a lot of really good moments, especially out of Lalas Abubakar. He just looks very confident and solid in all aspects of the game. He clears balls with his head well. He steps to defenders well. There was one moment at which early in the first half, LA was really pressing the Rapids very, very well and pushing them back. And there was a moment where a ball came into a forward who was kind of posted up, and there was just – it was a dangerous moment in the box, and Abubakar just stepped up and cleared it with one clever move as the ball was about to be delivered. I mean, he just saw the ball was coming in. He took a couple steps forward, and he brushed it away in a kind of initiative and timing that we didn't normally see from the Rapids in the past, where – the back line would either freeze and panic, or they would run forward into a terrible spot and then be just left completely naked. So those are a couple of the good things I saw. And one last good thing I saw was that Tim Howard had a pretty good game and saved a couple of really important balls in both the first and the second half. And it's great to see. You know, it's great to see Tim in his final year have not every game, but a couple, you know, several games now where I've seen him make plays that would have gone into the back of the net under another keeper. So a lot of good. Matt, your thoughts?
Passing sequences, passing sequences, passing sequences. If I had to select, Mark, if I say I'm playing a five-man midfield and, you know, there was kind of some questions at times in this game, whether it was a 4-2-3-1 or a flat 4-4-1-1, and then some combination of Nicholson, Bassett, and Lewis being that underneath guy roaming with Kamara. But if I just had to pick between Kamara up top and then five midfielders that I wanted to have the best passing sequences together, this would probably be the five, with Jonathan Lewis, Nicholson, Acosta and Price, and then Cole Bassett. Maybe the one exception I'd be potentially willing to make of the current roster, I'd throw Benny Fellhaber into that group if he was still with the club. But I'd include Johan Blomberg if for nothing but that little 20-yard dink over the top that he's able to do, that I'm sure on-running Lewis, Kai Kamara would absolutely feast on any day. But other than that, like, this is the group that you'd want to be able to pass together. We've seen this team at times in games where they've struggled have a couple of good sequences where they pass through the midfield quickly, and then that creates opportunities. But we didn't see it enough. We didn't see it executed at a high enough percentage, and we didn't see them do anything with the ball once they got the ball into dangerous places. Now, they got 22 shots, you know, a lot of them were off target, a lot of them were blocked, but they created, in terms of the conversion rate of passing sequences, getting into a good area in or around the final third, and then using that to ultimately create an opportunity on goal that David Bingham had to think about, they did much better at that, both in terms of number and in terms of conversion rate. You know, you mentioned Jonathan Lewis almost scoring, you know, Sam Nicholson had a couple of opportunities. This team passed through the LA Galaxy midfield that was not trivial in having Sebastian Legette, who's on the provisional roster for the U.S. men's national team, Jonathan Dos Santos, who is back from injury and is going to be with the Mexican national team for the Gold Cup, and Joe Corona, who was starting and won a championship for Club America and Liga MX 2-3 years ago. They passed through them so many times like they were Swiss cheese. The Rapids did, I would have expected the Rapids to do this to last year's, I would expect a good team from last year to have done this to the San Jose Earthquakes of yesteryear, but to do that against that group and then just completely put the defense on their heels on so many occasions. You know, Diego Polenta, who looked rattled from the first half, Gonzalez, who had to do a lot of cleanup work, thought David Bingham made a bunch of really good saves. And, you know, there were, I can count off the top of my head three instances, at least, where there's a gifable moment of a Rapids player making Daniel Serres look silly, who we both praised last week, Mark. You know, in terms of just pure chance creation, getting the ball in an okay area, turning that into getting the ball in a good area, and then a shot on goal, that was much better. I just would have liked to see Kai Kamara finish a little bit more of those. I guess on that, Mark, where should we start with bad things?
And I think the bad thing is this, and I'm going to compliment the team, the Rapids, in a way with bad thing, which is that LA's finishing was not very good. And so on some level, this could have very easily turned into a 10th loss. LA, I mean, the unfortunate thing is I really like to use these numbers in my column, but they're not out yet. American Soccer Analysis, which is a great website that you should all check out regularly, does game by game expected goals charts or expected goals numbers, where they'll tell you what were the odds based on the shots and where they were taken for a team to have scored and how many goals should they have scored. Those numbers aren't out from this game, but I can tell you that I know that LA's expected goals, based on all of the research that I've done in the past, I expect that their expected goals in this game was north of 1.5, which means they should have at least gotten a goal out of some of the chances that they've taken. They were just profligate in front of the face of net, and they made some mistakes. But that's going to happen. Sometimes you're going to not have a great expected goals game and you're going to win. Sometimes you're going to absolutely burn it up with expected goals and you're going to lose. You know, you play enough games in a season and a little bit of luck will break one way or another for you. LA had bad luck this game and the Rapids had good luck. Up till now, Colorado has been the bad luck team. So, but that's not going to work long term. There's another chart that I looked at by a website called Sock Takes that's doing some really neat work now, charting things like goals permitted, goals allowed per shot, and goals allowed per shots on target. And what they found was that the Rapids are conceding more shots than almost any team in the league, but they're also conceding more goals on fewer shots than almost any team in the league. They're conceding, basically what I'm saying is they're conceding very good chances. They've allowed the opponent to get into very good scoring places, and then they, of course, score on that.
The opponent scores more goals per shot against the Rapids than they do against other teams in MLS.
Any other team, right? You can't really break those numbers out because you have to watch games in order to understand what that means. But what it means is that, like, the Rapids are conceding goals in dangerous spots. They're conceding goals where, it's right across the face of the net and the goalkeeper's flat beat. You know, this is not goalkeeper errors or, it's widespread breakdowns of the defense that are allowing the opponent to get into really good and dangerous spots. We'll see if that can start to reverse now that they're playing with different players and a different formation. But, on some level, I think it's important to note that the Rapids were a bit lucky this game, and we could very easily be lamenting another defeat. That's how good LA had in terms of their chances. That's not a very good sentence. I'll try again. LA had really good chances and they didn't convert them, and this could have been more catastrophic than it was. Matt, what's your bad thing?
I'm going to say finishing, and I could say that about both teams, to be honest, Mark. You know, if I was guest hosting on Corner of the Galaxy, you know, this week, I would have said the same thing if we had done good thing, bad thing, big thing from a Galaxy perspective. You know, this game could have been 3-0 Rapids. This game could have been 3-0 Galaxy. It could have been 3-3, and it could have been any of those score lines in between. The finishing collectively from all this group was absolutely abhorrent, you know, save for Andre Shinichi, who had one, like, he only had one shot. You know, he couldn't have done any better than he did with the one that he scored on. So, I thought that was poor. I agree with you that the Rapids still gave up a lot of opportunities. And on another day, I think the Galaxy definitely could have gotten something from this game. And overall, I think you have to, you know, if you're counting, I think you have to look at strength of schedule in this result. Well, you know, yes, the Galaxy were second in the West going into this week, and, you know, they always play well at home. But there was no Zlatan Ibrahimovic because he was suspended for the, you know, little chokehold grab. I don't know how you'd want to describe it on Sean Johnson from this past Sunday. We didn't find that out until Friday. We also found out then that Diego Rubio wasn't going to be playing this game for what was ultimately an extra game suspension for his red card in the Rocky Mountain Cup against RSL. So you had no Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who is the sun upon which the Galaxy solar system orbits around. And then you also have, albeit we knew it, no Ramon Alessandrini. And, you know, maybe it turns out Jonathan Dos Santos, you know, was only 70% for this game instead of 100% coming back from injury. I could not imagine a weaker version of the 2019 LA Galaxy that the Rapids could have played. credit to them for getting a result, but, you know, like, this is, I think on another day, even with just lots on in there and everything else going the same, I thought they were really lucky. You know, you had Uriel Antuna, who's mostly a midfielder, who's had a couple good moments the last couple weeks starting. You had, Emma Boateng, you know, who is the king of getting the ball in space, burning a defender, and then just lumping a shot into Rosie and doing absolutely nothing with it. And then your attacking midfielder, albeit, you know, from my Galaxy contacts, they say very good things about him and that the coaching staff is so happy they got him. Fabio Alvarez was making, you know, his first start at the end of a very long season, you know, in the Argentine second division. So this was not a fully operational battle station that the Rapids were playing in the LA Galaxy. Credit to them for getting a result, but, you know, it's kind of similar to the win that they got against the Galaxy last year, at Dick's, you know, where Zlatan was suspended, from that game and they had to shuffle out the lineup and they ended up barely winning after the Galaxy got a red card. So, you know, I think happy for the win, happy for some aspects of the performance, some aspects of the performance were still ultimately atrocious, and the Rapids are going to have to improve significantly if they want to be, you know, other competent teams in MLS that are fully at full fitness and have their preferred starting 11 out there.
Well said.
Any other thing we want to add for a big thing here, Mark?
The big thing is I think we have a really good Ask HTHL that covers the big thing on some level, which is like, what does this mean? You know, what's the meaning of breaking the duck, of breaking the streak? And I think, you know, you might want to emotionally feel like this is this massive release, this incredible catharsis. But you might also like have tuned out this team and given up 3 games ago to the point where you could shrug your shoulders and say, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm, you know, the Rapids won, but I was watching Game of Thrones and it's probably not relevant anyways. And I think we're somewhere in the middle of like, that the right place for me anyways to be on this is to say that I'm right in the middle. Where I kind of feel like I should be excited about this because I liked the way the offense set up. I liked the way the new players are playing. I'm kind of excited to watch this Rapids team the rest of the year, even if they, you know, don't have much of a chance of making the playoffs. But on the other hand, like, I'm definitely watching it with a certain degree of resignation that this isn't really, I'm not super jazzed about the rest of the season. There's nothing I can do about it. One last thing I just wanted to say that's neither here nor there. It's not a good thing, a bad thing, or a big thing. It was just a great comment that a former writer for Around MLS, may its memory be for a blessing, Ryan Bales, who was our Galaxy beat writer. I missed the game because I was on a plane from Portland for work, and I said, how did the Rapids win this one? And he said, the Galaxy crossed the ball to short guys all game long and that didn't work. And I was like, oh, that's great. So I looked it up and the Galaxy made 36 open play crosses, which is an obscene number. They had 19 crosses in the second half. The vast majority of them all looked the same, which is Uriel Antuna runs right through to the back line on the right side in the corner. He gets real close to the line. He crosses it up and he misses everybody. And that's like, they did that, literally, that exact thing that I just described, that happened 7 times in the second half alone, right? If you do the same play and it doesn't work, don't do it again, right? So, you know, maybe this is a bad thing, but it's not really. It's that as much as the Rapids won this game, like, the Galaxy lost this one. Like, they played boneheaded, stupid soccer, and it hurt them.
No, I agree with you, Mark. You know, there were a number of sequences that you saw that the Galaxy were there, that were clearly things that they had worked on, plays that they had tried to execute and executed on early on in the season, but the difference was instead of it being plays that ultimately ended in getting the ball to Zlatan, it was getting the ball to Emma Boateng, which is significant. You know, that's, I think that's probably akin, Mark, to starting me, or I don't want to be rude to the Galaxy's Boateng on this one, but I mean, if Kai Kamara goes down, for example, and you've got to put, you know, you or me into the game, Mark, you are going to change how you play. You're not going to do the exact same thing, assuming that we can do what Kai Kamara can do, because there are many things that Kai Kamara does fantastically on the soccer pitch that we are absolutely terrible at, independent of us, you know, being middle-of-the-road rec league players.
I'm not even sure I'm a better writer than Kai Kamara, to be honest. If we swap jobs completely, I'm positive I'd be worse at him at soccer, and I'm not entirely sure that I'd be better at him at writing.
I think you'd be a better rabbi than he would be at as being a rabbi, I'd hope, Mark.
Almost certainly. That is always something that I think to myself when I'm out there, when I talk to the players, and I think to myself, like, yeah, you couldn't lead High Holiday Services like I could, but then again, you know, my command of ancient Hebrew really shouldn't put me over on anybody, really.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mark, shall we move on and upwards?
Yep, we got another game coming.
All right, listeners, we are currently 12/34 through the 2019 Colorado Rapids season. If my math is correct, that reduces down to 6/17. The Colorado Rapids, unfortunately, are still in 12th in the Western Conference and last in the Supporters Shield, but they're significantly closer than they were last week. They have 5 points off of 12 games played, 1 win, 9 losses, and 2 draws, a negative 13 goal differential that they improved ever so slightly on Sunday. And this coming Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park at 7 p.m., they will be taking on Columbus Crew SC. Crew SC are currently 8th in the Eastern Conference, 1 below the red line. They have 16 points off of 14 games played, 5 wins, 8 losses, and 1 draw, a negative 7 goal differential, but they have struggled mightily in the last month or so, Mark, save for a 3-1 win that they got against the LA Galaxy. The Crew have changed things up, Mark, as we'll get to when we have our guest come in for Know Thy Enemy. The Crew obviously have a new owner. Anthony Pucourt is out. You've got some local businessmen from Columbus, and then the owners of the Cleveland Browns coming in and owning the team, looking at getting a new downtown stadium not too far away from the Main Street downtown, and then also where the Columbus Blue Jackets play in the NHL. Their main forward is still Giassi Zardes. Federico Higuain Pipa Higuain is still their main starting number 10. They've had some rotations at center back, one related with a loan of Lalas Abubakar to the Colorado Rapids. They've got a bunch of injuries on the back line. Will Trapp is still their captain and locking things down in midfield. They've also changed the winger situation. You had Justin Miram get sold 2 off-seasons ago to Orlando City, come back to the Crew, and then was sold right at the deadline. That also aligned with Columbus picking up David Akam from the Philadelphia Union, who is just like, we should nickname him. He's like David Wanderer's Akam at this point, because he's now with the Crew after being with the Fire to start the season. Then he went to Philly. Philly traded him to Columbus. Then also on the same deadline day, he was sold for next year to Nashville SC, but then loaned for the rest of the season to Columbus. So he's on loan from Columbus and then will be joining Nashville in their inaugural season. So Columbus is kind of in transition, Mark, between what they were under Greg Berhalter and then now ultimately transitioning both in personnel and style towards how Caleb Porter wants them to play, some rotating names at the winger position, some rotating players on the back line. The only 2-3 real constants they have right now are Zardes up top, Higuain in the middle, and then Will Trapp right behind him. Your thoughts on the current state of the Columbus Crew and what we could see from them on Saturday, Mark?
I have a really nerdy take, which is, and you can tell me if you think I might be wrong about this, but I was looking at the basics of the team, and I was immediately surprised at the goalkeeper position, which I think is a great place to start. The most interesting player on the Columbus Crew is Zach Steffen. Zach Steffen is leaving for Europe because he was bought by
Manchester City, and he's on loan through the end of the international transfer deadline. So there's a very good possibility. He's currently he's questionable for this game. He had a boot on his leg in training, right, as we'll get to. And then he'll have the Gold Cup call up potentially. So there's a non-zero possibility that he has already played his final game for the Columbus Crew.
He's probably hurt for this weekend. And even if he's not hurt, or if he's recovering, I'm not sure why you would chance it for an almost meaningless midseason game against the Colorado Rapids with one of the most, you know, electric goalkeepers in American soccer. So last week, Columbus trotted out John Kempen, who is just a great guy in the sense that he is as journeyman get. He's played 10 seasons in Major League Soccer. He's only played 20 games.
How many 19, teams has he been on, Mark?
19 starts. He started with the Kansas City Wizards, who then became the Sporting Kansas City Sporks. And then the LA Galaxy and Columbus Crew. He hasn't moved around a lot. He just hasn't really played a lot. I mean, he was the number three for Sporting for a very long time. So you've got Kempen, and then the real backup is Joe Bendick, who had a pretty good run as the expansion goalkeeper for the, not the expansion goalkeeper, the second year goalkeeper, the sophomore year goalkeeper for Orlando City. And then before that, he was with Toronto, but he's an experienced, starting MLS goalkeeper. But you know, there are, I think he's one of the, this is one of the only teams in Major League Soccer who has played three goalkeepers this year, out of necessity. Fun fact also, their fourth goalkeeper is a guy by the name of Ben Lundgaard, who they drafted out of some Big Ten school, but I forget which one. And he currently is the regular starting goalkeeper for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. So I've seen Ben play a couple times. He's very big and very talented. And he's also hurt. So the Riverhounds had to go out and get another goalkeeper. So this is a team with four goalkeepers and two of them are hurt. One of them barely has ever played in his entire 10-year career. So that's pretty fascinating. That's really all I really want to say about Columbus. You know, other than that, everything else, is things that almost, all MLS fans know a lot about. Will Trapp is wonderful. 1L, 2Ps in Trapp. He's a great defensive midfielder who is really more of the Regista, kick it long, diagonal, make plays type. Although one thing that was brought up this past week that was really fascinating is that under Caleb Porter, Will Trapp, and parenthetically, the entire Columbus roster is playing far fewer long diagonal passes than the team did previously under Greg Berhalter. So that's the big tactical shift that you'll see. They like to play through the lines now. They like to play it wide. They do this accordion thing where they go outside and in, inside and out. But the long diagonal, you see less of that. That was kind of a hallmark of Greg Berhalter's offense, and we're not seeing as much of that. The other thing is they haven't been quite as successful recently. So this is a game that Colorado definitely has a chance at. And can make some noise in.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Mark. This is a Columbus Crew team that is in flux. It's a team that's not playing well right now. And normally the one rock that they had, especially last year, and then going into their two playoff runs that they've had the last two seasons, has been when all else fails, Zach Steffen can single-handedly keep them in the game and keep them in individual games and single-handedly keep their season alive. You know, if Pipa's hurt or if Jossie Zardes isn't scoring and there's no real secondary option, and they don't have that right now. I'm going to go to the full packs right now, Mark. They've got a bunch of injuries there. You know, you've got you know, two of the better ones, I would say, in the league, and Harrison Offal, and then Milton Valenzuela, who are both hurt out for this season. Valenzuela tore his ACL at the beginning of the season, likely out for the entire year. And then Harrison Offal actually broke his jaw and had to have his jaw wired shut. And now, like, he eats through a straw as he's, like, rehabbing that, which is kind of terrifying and painful, and I feel bad for him. So you've got, you know, Hector Jimenez, who's another journeyman player. You know, I would say Columbus Crew's equivalent of Dylan Serna, in all honesty, other than not being a homegrown. And then Josh Williams, who is a fantastic cheap, fantasy play early on in the season, has been starting at right back as well. This is a position that I would say, even if it's the two homegrowns, the teenagers starting at the fullback position, they should absolutely eat up the wing games at altitude. I'd look for the Rapids to definitely dominate possession in this one. And, you know, this is a team, you know, Akam, you know, is another match of the day player where he'll have a bunch of really good moments and then completely fade out of games or fade out for an entire month, for example. So unless he's absolutely on in this game, I really look at it as disrupt the connection between Higuain to Zardes and the Crew aren't going to be able to score. If the Rapids can do that with Jack Price and this two center backs and whoever else is playing in midfield next to Jack Price, and they're able to dominate the flanks, I like the Rapids to get a result in this one. Similarly, my comments about the Galaxy, this is definitely a weakened team. I think a 1-0 nail biter that the Rapids barely eke it out, and you could say the Rapids easily could have lost that one. Probably happy with the result, not excited about the results. With that, Mark, let's throw it to this week's episode of Know Thy Enemy, where I talk with Ralph Schiedel of Massive Report. Listeners, we'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We've got a very special episode of Know Thy Enemy coming up, bringing in one of my good friends in soccer and one of my favorite soccer people from the state of Ohio, Ralph Schiedel. Ralph, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
Hey, you know, it's a beautiful day in the state of Ohio. Feeling a little chill in the air. It's probably got that... We probably got that Colorado chill, and you guys are still getting snow out there. That's not fair.
Well, the snow's ended officially as of about Tuesday afternoon, and most of it's melting off. But yeah, I was coming out of the gym. You know, we'd gotten a lot of rain, you know, on Monday and everything. Like, oh, it was going to be a nice, you know, cool day, you know, high 60s and maybe down into the 40s at night. And then I get out, and there's 2 inches of snow on the ground. I'm just like... You know, with Game of Thrones ending and everything, Ralph, you know, apparently winter hasn't completely dusted off its chill. So, hopefully you take it. It doesn't come back this way because, Rapids fans have been punished very severely with the weather conditions for home games at DSG Park. I long for a day that is even just slightly overcast and in the 60 degrees at kickoff. We've got a great segment. I'm going to talk with you previewing the Rapids game on Saturday against the aforementioned Columbus Crew SC. So first of all, Ralph, I haven't spoken to you since this happened. Merry Crewmas, ding dong, Anthony Precourt is gone.
I'm really glad you didn't say dead, because I thought that was going to be kind of morbid there. But it's a wonderful thing. As we were talking before we went on air, we weren't thinking that we were going to be doing this. I didn't think I was going to have another chance to sit here and talk with you, chat soccer a little bit. You know, maybe I would have been like an NASL reporter, rip NASL, unfortunately. But, you know, or maybe USL Championship with, you know, maybe Indy 11 or something. But, yeah, it's really nice to be back. It's back. Nice to be in Major League Soccer talking about the black and gold. Would love to see a little bit of a better form out of this team to talk about, but, you know, it's nice to be here. It's nice to have that problem to talk about bad form in Major League Soccer in 2019.
Fantastic stuff. So let's get into that, Ralph. We've seen the Crew go through a couple of different stages so far this season. You know, they had a really decent start. They were good defensively. They've got some injuries now on defense. And I think maybe the question or the thing everybody was looking at with, Caleb Porter taking over is how much this team was Greg Berhalter's team in terms of built and structure, and style of play, and then ultimately becoming whatever version Caleb Porter wanted it to be. I'll hesitate. I'm only going to say it so I acknowledge that I'm not going to bring it up again, but Porter Ball from his time with Portland Timbers and how far apart those two visions were. And then with that and the ownership change over the offseason, how long that transition was going to take. Where is the team in terms of that evolution, and what growing pains are they undergoing given that this is Caleb Porter trying to fit a Porter team into a Greg Berhalter sized hole?
I think we're very early on. It's not necessarily time to hit the panic button. This team is very committed. This ownership group with the Haslams and the Edwards families are very committed. They signed Porter to a 5-year deal when he came on. So I think they understand that this is going to take time. As for the team structure, it's still very much Greg Berhalter's team. Are Caleb Porter and Greg Berhalter very similar in nature? Absolutely. There are very subtle differences between them. The big one that I think folks are going to see is that, you know, Porter likes to have the number 9, or Giassi Zardes in this instance for the listeners, play a little bit deeper and help with the buildup. And that's one of the big things. We, largely what we've seen this year so far is a 4-2-3-1 formation out of Caleb Porter. He has randomly gone to a 4-3-3. But for the most part, this is Caleb Porter's team playing with Greg Berhalter under the guise of Greg Berhalter's system. But, you know, I don't think he's got his guys in there yet, Matt. That's the big thing with him. You're starting to see that transition a little bit with David Guzman coming in after the trade for the international roster spot. And then the weird David Akam acquisition that suddenly he's going to be in Nashville next season. But you're starting to see those type of pieces come together. And I was talking with a couple of my colleagues today that I think – you know, they're not going to be done. The second that the international transfer window opens up, I think that there's going to be some movement coming up. You've already seen some exits of, like, Justin Miram leaving the team. You've seen, you know, obviously we touched on Akam. Akam will leave the team to go to Nashville, the new club that's set to go online next season. But I think you could see some new players coming in that are that Caleb Porter type player. And I think him and Tim Bezbachenko have been working on that for some time.
Well said, Ralph. Let's go to the offense. I will unabashedly admit that I am a Giassi Zardes apologist. You know, he just signed a new contract last week, maybe a couple weeks ago, officially making him a designated player, something that he probably never would have gotten with the LA Galaxy. Well, he has been a functional number nine, I think a usable piece depending on the system, certainly functional at times with the Galaxy, certainly with the Crew under Greg Berhalter, and I think will have some role for the United States men's national team in the 2022 cycle. It's kind of him on an island as far as offensive opportunities. You know, the Crew had that outburst against Artis's former team, the Galaxy, a couple weeks ago, and other than that, it's been pretty dry. And this is something that we even saw last year where, yeah, you know, Zardes got almost 20 goals on the season, but then it was nobody else really scoring. We weren't seeing a lot of chance creation from Justin Miram once he came back from the trade with Orlando, you know, midseason, and now he's ultimately gone, and it's kind of unclear where, you know, it just seems so one-dimensional from the standpoint of if you shut down Giassi Zardes, the Crew don't score. What's going on with the offense? What's working and not working for Zardes, and who else needs to step up?
You know, I think what's going on with the offense right now is you just don't have players executing in key moments. You see these players either take a touch too heavy and they turn the ball over to the center backs. And it's just they're not executing at the right times. I think it's not particularly, you know, a certain player's fault necessarily. I think Higuain's trying to drive the engine at the center of the park. He's linking up with Zardes, but most center backs in the league know that if you target number 11, you're probably going to limit the yellow team scoring for the evening. So that being said, you've got to look to the wings. You've got to get more creative on the wings. Pedro Santos thankfully has stepped up this season. He is now going to, you know, he's, it feels weird to say with the limited amount of goals and assists that he has, especially for a designated player, he is the, this is the best year he's had for Columbus. And then you've had a rotating cast of characters on the wings with Rapinoe, the now exited Justin Miram, and then David Akam, who started against Minnesota last week. The big thing is these guys need to tighten up. I think that comes with that Porter ball that we talked about a little bit and just kind of breaking it down, tighter passing. I think the guys are just trying to make too many forced balls, which is leading to just killing scoring chances. And the big thing too, look, I love Justin as a player and as a person, but the big thing was he held on to the ball too long, and he would kind of run into the center of traffic. Everybody would slide over, key in on him, tackle him, and he'd be dispossessed very quickly. So you've got to eliminate that. You've got to always look for the open player because somebody's open. These defenders can't pitch a perfect game all the time. You know, so you've got to try to get somebody open using a great cross, great passing, stuff like that. But that's just something that this team's not getting right now for some reason. And it's frustrating the fans, but, you know, they've got to keep hammering it away because, you know, Porter's got a team in place that's going to do some great things. It's just the execution that needs to fall into place.
Absolutely. If I'm trying to make some connections between the success that Porter had with the Portland Timbers compared to now, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, they're missing a player a la a Darlington Nagbe, excuse me, though. I think he'd be a fantastic addition to the crew. But I think they're missing like a circa 2013-2014 Rodney Wallace to play on that left side opposite Pedro Santos. And I'm blanking on really coming up with a good interleague option if they wanted to find somebody. That might have to be something they pursue in the summer with their opportunities. One question, I guess, on that front, Ralph, do you get the sense with the new ownership group coming in that there's going to be more financial flexibility than the crew have had in the past? You know, you mentioned Pedro Santos being a DP. I think he was the biggest acquisition in club history at like $2.4 million, which compared to some of the other teams in the Eastern Conference is chump change.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of crazy, and I know that you know, unfortunately, Mr. Kroenke doesn't flex a lot of money around with the Rapids. But the big thing that I knew that we were going to be in for a good ownership group was on opening day. You know, the Haselman, the Edwards families put so much money into the stadium just on aesthetics and fixing things up that went neglected by Anthony Precourt. And, you know, they are going to be totally and utterly fine with spending as much money as they need to make this team work well. Now, do I think the Browns are first priority? Absolutely. You know, they went out and got Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham, and I think that's for another podcast later on down the road. But, you know, this team doesn't seem, you know, the ownership group doesn't seem like they are going to, you know, kind of balk at spending money. I mean, shoot, they're looking at opening up a $200+ million stadium in 2020-ish. You know, so they're exploring, they're getting input on everything that they need from the fan experience. I believe too with Tim Bezbachenko, I believe he's got an open checkbook that he can go out and go look for players. I don't think he's going to be able to get the it'll be interesting to see if he could go out and land the Sebastian Giovinco type player that'll be, you know, $7 million. I think looking back at the crew roster the first year that Giovinco was in the league, I think the entire crew roster made up Giovinco's wages. So it'll be interesting to see that if you can land a player of that caliber. But I wouldn't be also shocked to see that. I think that they've done a really nice job wheeling and dealing with international roster spots, Tam and Gam. You know, they bought down Jonathan Mensah's contract. He was a designated player. He's been bought down with Tam and Gam and doesn't count against those slots. So it's still perfectly open to landing a big DP. And Tim Bezbachenko said that that's something that could happen in the near future. Now, whether he was – that was a couple weeks before Giassi Zardes was admitted as a assigned a designated player status, so who knows if that's what he meant. But they are actively looking, and they are trying to better the team for the future.
Well, let's move on to the other side of the ball. The crew are the walking wounded, literally, from the defensive side. You know, I would argue on paper, fully fit and healthy, Ralph, that going into the season, the crew had a top five fullback pairing between Milton Valenzuela and Harrison Offal. They will both be out for this game. You've got Milton Valenzuela, who tore his ACL in preseason and is likely out for the entire season. And then to help out with that, they brought in Waylon Francis, who's questionable, and, as we got talking, you know, it's unlikely that Zach Steffen, you know, the heir apparent, sort of the passing of the torch from Tim Howard potentially, you know, will not be playing as well on Saturday. The crew've been leaking goals at times, and that hasn't helped them, especially given the woes that they have offensively that you just mentioned. And there's only so much that Artur and Will Trapp can do to protect, you know, a very rickety front. What's going on with the crew defense, and what do you look at in terms of how they're going to try and stop what the Rapids are doing right now?
Well, and I think that goes back to the offensive problems, is that I think you're starting to see how, as weird as this is for a lot of fans to kind of take in, how important these fullbacks were to the crew offense. You know, Milton Valenzuela, admittedly, when he came in, I didn't know anything about the kid when he first came in, but after seeing him play two or three games, I sat back and I said, Berhalter found a gem, man. This kid is very legit. So when he went down with an ACL injury, that crushing, And then Harrison Offal getting his jaw broken and had to have it wired shut. I mean, the poor guy, I saw him in training just a couple weeks after that, you know, and he was talking, having difficulty talking, as one would tend to do with having their jaw wired shut. But, you know, he's lost a lot of pounds, but he's lost some weight from that, as you can imagine, you know, taking most of your food in through a straw. So he's probably going to have to build some muscle back up before he gets back in his, the swing of things. But yeah, defense wise, I mean, the center backs are fine. I mean, Crew have a couple fine center backs with like Gaston Saro, Josh Williams, Jonathan Mensah, Lalas Abubakar, wherever he fell off to, wherever he's hiding. That's a joke, guys. So there are a lot of great starting caliber center backs. It's just, you know, like you said, Matt, I think it's like you're peeling back an onion a little bit there is, you know, if you don't have starting caliber fullbacks to help you out, your defense is exposed and they're on an island. And these teams know that they could press a high press and kind of crowd the two center backs and overwhelm them, because chances are these fullbacks aren't going to be able to come back and cover. So, you know, you're going to get really great quality opportunities. And I think, you know, with the forward that you guys have, the quality forward that you guys have there, it could be potentially very dangerous. And, you know, Joe Bendick and John Kempen, God love them, great individuals. I don't think that they can fill the shoes vacated by the absence of Stefan. And I think, you know, Stefan, especially with the Gold Cup coming up, I see this on Twitter, a lot of people asking me, do you think that Zach Stefan played his last game in a Crew uniform? And I firmly believe so, especially with how bad this injury is taking to kind of heal and recoup. He was in a walking boot today in training, so I don't know if he's going to be exactly ready to go for Saturday. My guess would be no, especially with the long flight to Colorado and playing in elevation. Can't imagine that that's going to be great for his circulation, especially with that sort of muscle injury or whatever he's got going on there. But it's tough. And again, this goes back to that transfer market where I think, you know, you have to get some reinforcements. Waylon Francis is great, but, you know, you're going kind of all in with him, kind of assuming that he's never going to get hurt. And, you know, poor Connor Maloney, who we may see on Saturday, is a great reserve player out of Penn State that the Crew have had, but the poor guy hasn't seen the field yet. So I don't know if that speaks to how far down on the depth chart he is for Caleb Porter, but there are players there. It's just whether they have the trust of the coach yet or not.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You're a fantastic guest, Ralph, in that you constantly provide easy segues with your joke there about Lalas Abubakar, who the Rapids media have dubbed, we're trying to describe his hair, and I think we settled on sea anemone.
Okay.
Okay. Like, I was kind of thinking like palm tree, or I was researching like what Pokemon is shaped like how Abubakar's hair is, and I think we settled on sea anemone. But in any case, he's come in for the Rapids, and you know, he helped them get a result at LA Galaxy over the weekend. You know, almost scored in what would have been the game tire, but he was ruled offsides in the Rocky Mountain Cup that was his debut. And I think certainly from a passing standpoint, but also a 1v1 defending, and I'm not going to openly make a mistake that single-handedly loses the game, Abubakar is certainly a upgrade over a number of the other center backs that the Rapids have at their disposal. Talk about Abubakar's time with Columbus Crew, what you think of him as a player, and maybe why the Crew decided to ultimately do an interleague loan, which we do not see a whole lot of in MLS.
Yeah, freakishly athletic players, Rapids fans will start to figure it out. He's very athletic, can jump for a big man very high. It's very alarming. I've seen it at field level numerous times. But yeah, he's a great young player, full of potential, but he's young. And that's the thing, is that his first game with the Crew against Houston this year, he had a turnover right to Mauro Manotas and led to an opening goal roughly, I believe, about 20 seconds into the game. So it was a tough kind of – that's what he's prone to. He has moments of brilliance and he has moments of like, what are you doing, guy? So he's got to get minutes to get better, and I think that's where the interleague loan kind of helps him a little bit is to get more minutes. You know, we see we're very good about this, where we loan a lot of our players to USL championship sides. I think we've been making Indy 11 and Birmingham Legion very busy with black and gold players lately. But to see this interleague loan, I was kind of taken aback when I got the press release about it. I said, whoa, wow, wow, okay. You know, so it's I think it's good. I think that speaks to the quality of player that Abubakar is, that you can loan him interleague, that he can hack it at a major league soccer level, and his confidence won't be affected at all or anything like that. So, I think it's a great thing that he's out in Colorado. I think he's got tons of potential, but you know, he is prone to a little bit of kind of questionable decision making at times, but I think the good definitely outweighs the bad. I think it's about a 70-30 split with how he performs, but yeah, as fans will hopefully not see in Colorado, he does have kind of moments where you're left scratching your head going, what are you doing, dude?
Well, I think Rapids would definitely take the 70% good and the 30% scratching their head and wondering what he does given what some of the other center back performances the Rapids have had. Ralph, that does it for all the main stuff that we have. Why don't you tell us where people can find you on the interwebs and what you're working on? And if you're feeling super confident, feel free to gauge a prediction on this Saturday's match between Columbus and Colorado.
Matt, it's been a pleasure as always. So thankful to be here. Quick story. I know we gotta go, but I'm gonna give you a quick story.
Go for it.
So we were at training the day of the Dominic Baggi, Kellen Acosta trade, and I looked at Greg Berhalter and I said, "What in the heck is FC Dallas doing, trading Kellen Acosta to the Rapids?" And he says, Berhalter in his calm demeanor, as fans are quickly learning now since he's been the coach for some time now, "I'll tell you what, they got a great deal. Colorado's going to be a winner. Colorado's going to be a winner. FC Dallas is going to be a winner. This is going to work out great for both teams." And I sat there, but I'm like, but Colorado doesn't have anybody to score with right now. Like, what are they doing? But, and then Kellen Acosta goes out and I think he rips off like 3 goals in his first 2 games or something like that.
Yep.
But that's a talented kid. You guys got to build around him. He's that's my piece, I think. That's going to be my thing I want to drop, my knowledge I want to drop on everybody. But everybody, don't give up on Kellen Acosta.
Okay, I think that's a good message for some of our listeners, given that he was omitted from the Gold Cup provisional roster. But in any case,
that doesn't matter. It's like recruiting in college. Those 2-star players, you know, they end up to being, you know, great players. Kellen Acosta is a good player. You got to give him his due. He'll be good. Just trust the process. So, you guys can find me. I am a member of the Massive Report, massivereport.com, the SB Nation website there. You guys also can find me on Twitter, frequently tweeting at Mr. Pollard there. So it's at Schudel, S-C-H-U-D-E-L underscore Ralph. And then, if you guys want to, like Ohio Dominican University, we're the proud fighting Panthers, man. So I'm on staff at ODU, so it's wonderful. Great place to play if you're a Division II prospect, if you want to play Division II soccer. We need goalkeepers right now, man. I got to keep my goalkeepers entertained a little bit. So if you want to come play for me, that'd be great. No, I don't think I can recruit that way. NCAA, if you're listening, don't listen to that part. I don't know if that's a violation or not. I'm going to be completely honest with you. If you guys want to follow me, go ahead, follow me. But you guys got great people in Colorado. You don't need to come look at Columbus soccer. You don't need to do that. Just focus on us once a year. As for a prediction, and this, I'm not going to give you the Homer special here since I'm on Colorado Rapids holding the line radio here. I'm not going to do that. But I am going to inflate your ego a little bit. As we talked about with the defense is in shambles right now. Let's call a spade a spade. Josh Williams playing right back is not a beautiful thing. You know, if you guys want to go back and go on YouTube and Google, really great goals against Josh Williams. I'm not even sure that's a subject line. But Federico Higuain hits a beautiful chip from roughly about 25 or 30 yards out against TFC. Back when Mr. Williams was on TFC, he was the right back in the situation. So if that tells you anything, if his own teammates scolding him tells you anything, then we're in some deep doo-doo. And then Hector Jimenez, God bless him, he's a jack of all trades. He will probably make the U.S. men's national team at some point because Berhalter loves him, is going to be playing left back. He's a great player. He's not left back. He's a right back by trade. So I'm going to tell you guys, I think Special K old Kai Kamara puts one in on the black and gold, which I know he would love nothing more than to do. I think it's a 1-0 win for the Rapids.
All right, then. I think Rapids fans will definitely take that given how their season's gone. Ralph, thank you very much for joining us. Listeners, we'll be right back with me and Mark Goodman finishing out the show. Welcome back, listeners, to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard, here with Mark Goodman. Mark, we did not do it before we went to Know Thy Enemy, so I'll ask it for you now. Give me a scoreline prediction for Saturday for the Pids.
I think 2-2. I'm not as optimistic that this is an easy or game for the Rapids. I think that they have some real challenges in terms of breaking down this very solid defense. It'll depend on whether Waylon Francis is healthy at left back. He's been pretty solid fill in for them for Columbus, and also Jonathan Mensah has been really fantastic at center back, and I think he'll be a difficult person to match up against Kai Kamara, and that'll take a little bit of sting out of them. But I also think that this is going to be a freewheeling kind of open match. You know, Colorado just got their first shutout of the season. The odds of them going from giving up 2 and 3 goals every single game to suddenly pulling 2 shutouts out of a hat in a row seems unlikely to me. So I'm going 2-2.
I'll take 1-1 in this game. I think Caleb Porter is going to be very pragmatic about this game. He's not going to be, you know, he knows what it takes to have to come to altitude and get a result. He did it with the Portland Timbers, you know, 2 times a year, you know, 1 at RSL and then 1 at the Rapids. I think he'll know what comes in this game. I think the Crew are going to be really sound and really disciplined defensively, try to frustrate the Rapids. I agree with you that the matchup to watch in terms of, you know, if something can tip the balance is probably going to be Kai Kamara against Jonathan Mensah, especially on set pieces. Other than that, you know, we'll see what Porter does both in personnel and tactical approach as far as the fullback positions, as I mentioned, you know, earlier on in the show. But I think the Crew are going to come here. They're going to be really stout defensively. They're going to look to break in this game and try and frustrate the Rapids in their own half and eat up the clock. You know, I'll take Kai Kamara getting something on one of what will probably be 30 crosses into the box, and he'll finally beat Jonathan Mensah. And if it's not Zach Steffen, you know, it'll probably be a pretty easy header for him to get by either Bendick or John Kempen. And then on the other side, we haven't really seen it from him this season, but he's still really capable, and the Rapids have been burned by it in the past. I'll take Pipe Higuain on a free kick from outside the box. You know, I'll say that, you know, Columbus gets a counterattack going and Akam or Zardes ends up drawing a foul, maybe a yellow card from, you know, a professional foul for trying to break up a scoring opportunity. And then Higuain just is able to curl in something that nobody, not even Everton or, you know, World Cup against Belgium, Tim Howard is going to stop, and we'll end up being a 1-1 draw for the two sides. With that, Mark, let's go to Ask HTHL. We've got one tonight, and it comes from Matthew Cleveland. Matt asks, hashtag AskHTHL, how do we appropriately celebrate this win while also realizing it's just one win in a long season? And to be clear, I don't care that Zlatan was out. I'm celebrating! Exclamation. Mark, we touched on this a little bit with Big Thing. How should we approach expectations, celebrating a win, or in celebrating a win, acknowledging the fact that, you know, this was such a big deal for the Rapids because the Rapids are not good?
I mean, I just don't think you can get too excited because, I mean, the one thing you can get excited about is we did not set the record for longest winless streak to start a season. And that's notable because, you know, the things that the Rapids have records in are things that are, like, you know, tattooed on my brain in ways that I don't really want them, you know? Holding the record for the most ties, holding the record for the most nil-nil draws in a row, holding the record for fewest home goals conceded in 2016. That's a good one. But, you know, being in the record books is notable and memorable. Everybody can tell you, everybody who's an MLS nerd can tell you who the worst team in MLS history was. It was the 2013 DC United club that also won US Open Cup. But, like, you know, you don't want to be the most or the least of almost anything. It's just too memorable. So that's good. But that being said, like, they haven't proven that they can repeat this. And until they have proven that they've got a formula here, I'll temper my expectations. What do you think?
One of my philosophies when it comes to sports and life in general, Mark, is that happiness is defined by expectations. We both said before the season started that we predicted the Rapids would ultimately miss the playoffs. I think it became pretty obvious to most, if not all, the fan base and most of the people in the MLS community that the Rapids were not good a month into the season. And, you know, 2 months into the season, it became very obvious that this team was really bad to the point of approaching, you know, what stats can we pull at for them to set a historic bad record? You know, a record that, as you said, is tattooed and scarred onto your brain and your brain tissue in a bad way and becomes scar tissue. So in that, approaching this game, acknowledging that the Rapids hadn't won a game, that they were about to break a record previously set by the 2007 RSL team, expectations were pretty low. I think anything short of a complete blowout loss and, you know, Zlatan, you know, being player of the week and scoring goal of the week probably would have been seen on some level a moral victory or, you know, not the bottom barrel in terms of the absolute result. So for me at this point, just given that, you know, the Rapids had two draws, one other crazy circumstances in Snow Classico 3, the other in a circumstance, especially given how Sporting Kansas City have played since then, was a disappointing, you know, the draw against Portland was a draw that felt like a win. And the against crazy circumstances, you couldn't have done any better than I think that team did that night. And the draw against Sporting Kansas City was a draw that felt like a loss. Anything that was remotely positive, both from a performance and a results standpoint, for me was going to be something to celebrate. So, Matt Cleveland, I would say that you absolutely should celebrate this win. The Rapids did not, you know, break a new record and, you know, X out, you know, cross out RSL from that section of the MLS, you know, records as written by the MLS Maesters. That's another, Game of Thrones reference for you, Mark. The Maesters are like the nerds who read everything in the library. And then so they're just like they're just like factoids that lords will go to and ask for specific historical references or advice based on their experience and historical precedent and everything. They're basically PhDs, but for they're Game of Thrones Wikipedia, effectively. And so the Rapids did not set that new record. So I believe that we should celebrate it from the standpoint of you got the first win in the column. It could have been a lot worse. It wasn't a lot worse, but I still think we should temper expectations. I still expect this team to miss out the playoffs by a significant amount. This is still a team that is going to have to improve significantly over the next couple of months to not win in air quotes, the 2019 MLS Wooden Spoon. If they beat Columbus and they have a good performance, and then they thrash FC Cincinnati on June 1st, and I think they've got a midweek game in there, question mark. You know, if they turn that win on Sunday into a couple of wins in a row, then I think we can start to eke up the expectation bar. But until then, I think the expectation bar should move maybe just one minor notch up from where it was previously, but I still think that at least for the moment, the happiness knot should be all the way up, and we should bring it back down to the expectation one, and then, you know, recalibrate after Saturday's result. Anything else, or shall we get out of here, Mark?
All I got left is a quick plug, as usual, for the mug. The plug for the mug. So if you'd like to support our podcast, we've done another run of mugs. If you chip in $5 per month, and you can stop after, you know, a couple months, or if you'd like to drop us $40 all at once and then after 1 month cancel because Patreon only has recurring, we will mail you a mug and some stickers. And, you know, the cost of the mug is like $15 and then the shipping is going to be like $5, $6, $7, you know, all together. So we're only making a little bit of profit on this. And the only profit we're trying to pull is not so that me and Matt can line our fat pockets with more greenbacks, because we're just rolling in it as soccer writers and soccer podcasters. No, it's just to offset the hosting costs for what we pay to Blueberry. So, which is our hosting wizards. So if you'd like to help out and keep us from having to forego shoes for our children or beers for our children or beers for our shoes or shoes for our beers, then you should consider just chipping in. And if you really don't want a stupid mug with any stupid, possibly irritating or poorly thought out graphics on the side, then you can always just throw a buck to us each month on Patreon and just be like, thanks for doing what you do. We really appreciate it. Also, listeners, if you endured this annoying pitch for sponsoring our podcast and you're rolling your eyes and you're like, yo, Mark and Matt are terrible at what they do and no one in their right mind would pay them money, I just am a long haul trucker. And at some point, the radio cuts out over the Rockies, and it's either them or Christian Radio. I totally get it, guys. We are very honored that you listen to this podcast. And even if you never give us a thin dime in your entire lives, we're greatly appreciative of you.
Well said. Listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard. Follow the show on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHTHL. We've got a great relationship going on with the Denver Post. If you want a special deal on their digital content, head on over to denverpost.com/HTHL. You'll get 3 months of 99 cents per month for 3 months on the digital content. That'll get you access to a lot of great stuff, including what Mark writes. Check out our written content at denverpost.com and lastwordonsoccer.com. respectfully, find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Holding the High Line or Rapids 96 Podcast. And as Mark mentioned, if you want to get at us on Patreon, patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast, you could also just go into their search engine and search Holding the High Line, and we're the first entry that comes up. With that, listeners, we will see you next week, where possibly, Mark, we are talking about a 2019 Colorado Rapids winning streak. Crew Morgulis.